Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Friday, and welcome to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Each week, Brenda brings you interesting guests and timely topics to uplift and motivate you to be all that you can be today and for all your tomorrows. Join Brenda and Alive to Thrive every Friday at noon Central Time, right here on Greater Good Ministries Radio. And now, here's Brenda Fraser.
Please welcome Mike Henderson and the Blue Bloods.
When I get drunk, who's gonna carry me home? But when I get drunk, who's gonna carry me home? Well, I'm sober now, but I won't be sober long.
Welcome to Alive to Thrive. That was Mike Henderson doing When I Get Drunk. I love that song. It's so much fun. Mike's music is really high energy. I got to see our guest who's coming on in just a few minutes. I got to see him originally at the Bluebird Cafe in Nashville. It was a couple of summers ago. He performs there monthly. I don't know how many years he's been performing there, but he is an incredible guitar player. I was really surprised. I had no idea what to expect. My brother-in-law, Ron Young, invited me to go check out his favorite musician, and we just had front row seats, and it was excellent. And Mike's on the line with us now, so welcome to the program. Mike, how are you doing?
I'm good, Brenda. How are you?
Good. Thanks for being with us. I understand you're a little bit hoarse today, and that's perfectly understandable with how much singing you do on a daily basis.
Well, I've had a little bit of a cold and been coughing, but other than that, I'm just fine.
Oh, okay. Well, are you in Nashville today?
I am, yes.
Okay. Well, I was reading a little bit about you on your website. Want to make sure our listeners know to go to mikehenderson.com. Nice and easy to spell and remember. Mike has been nominated for 3 Grammys for Best Country Performance by a duo or group. He was with a group called the Steel Drivers. And he was also nominated for, Best Bluegrass Album and Best Country Performance. So you've been around the industry a long time. How did you first get started? And, I mean, have you been playing guitar since you were just a kid?
Pretty much, yes. I started when I was, about 12. And just kind of stuck with it down through the years. So I pretty well been playing all my life.
You're a very intense performer, and I love that intensity and that passion. What drives you? What is your driving force?
Well, I think a lot of it, Brenda, has to do with when the band plays, it's more than the sum of the parts. And there's a feeling you get, or a sound that you make together, I guess it's probably a better way to put it than a feeling, that you can't get just sitting and playing by yourself. And when everybody's locked in and playing together in a good way, that's its own reward.
It must be like a spiritual experience when you just get that right, exact moment in sync.
Yes. That's a good way to put it.
The Bluebird's your church, your cathedral?
Well, I don't know about that, but yeah, we have a good time. I tell people, excuse me, I tell people a lot that, you know, a lot of guys get together one night a week and play poker, and we play music instead.
Mm-hmm.
So it's for us, it's as much about the friendship and the fellowship and all that. I mean, none of us are doing it for the money, of course.
When you first started out, did you start out more as a songwriter behind the scenes, or were you in a band right from the start?
Right, I was in a band. I didn't start writing songs until I moved to Nashville back in 85.
85.
Uh-huh.
And what was your first big lucky break?
Well, I would say the song Powerful Stuff, Thunderbirds recorded, was my first cut, my first, you know, time anybody else had recorded one of my songs. So, excuse me, that would be, I guess, my first one, yeah.
And so you've played and, well, recorded with so many different people, and you toured with Mark Knopfler in 2000 and 2001. How did you and Mark get connected?
Well, again, through the Bluebird, I was playing at the time with Kevin Welch, who's a great songwriter, singer-songwriter. And we had a gig down there, and somebody brought Mark to hear us. I can't remember who it was, but he came in and listened to us play, and we all hung out after the show. And then after that, whenever Mark would come to town, he would always show up, and we just kind of got to know each other that way. And he invited me to play on his record, and then after that record was finished, he invited me to be on the tour. And
was that your first international tour?
No, but it was definitely the most high class one I had ever done. I mean, we had private jets and things like that.
What was a country you went to that, you know, that surprised you or didn't meet your surpassed your expectations, or in some way was different than what you expected?
Let's see. I went to the tour started in Mexico City, and from there we went to Argentina, all the way down South America, and then we worked our way back up. And I had never been south of Mexico before, so that was very interesting to see the different cultures down there. I was surprised at Argentina because it had a very European feel to it. I mean, walking down the street, you would think you were in France or somewhere, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Very, not at all what I had expected. I'd always kind of thought of Argentina as, you know, you hear about the, what do they call it? They have a word for the cowboys and all down there.
Mm-hmm.
I had always thought of it that way, and I was very surprised at how, I mean, the cities and all very old and beautiful. And so I guess that was one of them that surprised me. Most of the time on that tour, we didn't have a lot of time to get out and explore around. You know, we were on the move constantly and spent an awful lot of time just at the venue. Wherever Mark was, we were always all together. And so I got to see a lot of the world, but I saw a lot of it just in a very brief kind of fashion, you know. We'd be in a,
from hotel rooms and from the stage.
Well, a lot of times we would get we would get in, say, you know, around 2 o'clock in the afternoon and go straight to the venue and do a sound check. And then, you know, we would just stay there. And then when as soon as the show was over, we'd go straight to the airport and go to the next town. And then in that next town, you might have the morning where you could get up and walk around and kind of sightsee a little bit. And then we'd do it all over again. So there was a lot of back-to-back show dates. We'd do 12, 13 shows in a row and then maybe have one or two, sometimes 2 days off. That was a rarity. So it was hard work, but like I said, everything was first class. We were treated nice and stayed in 5-star hotels most of the time.
Did your significant other go with you, or were you on the road by yourself?
Well, actually, there were two breaks in the tour, and Mark would fly you home if you wanted to come home. And he was flying the band business class. And the cost of the one business class ticket was enough for my wife and my two children to come over to Europe. So on the breaks, my family came to me, and that way my children got to.
Excellent.
Yeah, it was nice, very nice.
So you were singing in English, and your audience was predominantly Spanish-speaking, correct?
Well, in South America, yes.
Yeah. I noticed on YouTube some of your Spanish fans or fans from South America have posted some of your videos, and it just is kind of cute to see that, you know, the titles or the notes are in Spanish, and so you have a following now. And you played in Moscow. What was that like? That's kind of unusual. Just before 9/11, that not many people were.
We played in the Olympic I'm looking for the right word. The indoor track from the Olympics that the United States boycotted back in the 80s or whenever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a huge place. And Mark insisted on that gig that the ticket prices be low enough that anybody that wanted to come to the show could afford to be there. So it was one of the biggest crowds that we had. It was enormous, and it was also the last show of the tour. So we were all, we were all excited to be finally getting finished and to know we were going to come home. Everybody really gave it their all that night. It was quite a show. It was, and our hotel was overlooked Red Square.
Mm.
So we had a couple of hours that afternoon to walk around and kind of play tourist in Red Square. I got to see that. Then the next, after the show, we had to leave about 5 in the morning the next day. It was that's a long flight, Moscow to Nashville.
So with the being on stage so much, does it get easier, or do you still get a little pre-jittery stage issue? Or, I mean, do you have a routine of something you do to calm your mind before you go on, or is it just the opposite?
No,
you try to pump up?
I haven't had any of those issues for a long, long time. I mean, for, you know, 20 or 25 years, I guess, since I was nervous about going on stage. It's just I've done it so much that it just feels natural to me.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't bother me at all.
And do you feel one with your audience?
Yes. Uh-huh. I do. very much.
I mean, I noticed that at the Bluebird. You were so down to earth and so connected, and you really connect to people on an individual basis. And whether it's playing the guitar really softly and playing it with a salt shaker, all these fun and clever and quirky things you can do. But it's a very personal experience to witness you on stage. And, of course, the Bluebird is so special. And I mean, what is that for you? Have you had people come up to you after the show and share personal stories of what your music has meant to them?
Yes, I have a few times. I don't know. I just try to, you know, give the people, you know, something they can remember and carry with them when they leave. Just like I would like to have if I went to listen to someone play.
What's something about you that your fans don't know?
Something about me that my fans don't know. I don't know what that would be.
I mean, do you feel you're more of an open book, or do you feel more of a private person that your personal life is, you know, separate from? I mean, this day and age,
well,
a lot of musicians are tweeting everything they do, you know, but, I mean, has that been hard to maintain a private life?
No, not at all. Nashville is, that's one of the cool things about living here is people here are used to bumping into Nicole Kidman at the grocery store and, you know, seeing Emily Harris at Walgreens and things, and they everybody leaves you alone. Nobody bothers
mm-hmm.
you unless it's somebody you know. You know, people will come up to me and say, "Hey, Mike, how you doing? I heard you play not too long ago," and that'll be that. You know, it's not they don't. Nobody.
There's not a lot of paparazzi issues like there is in L.A. or New York or something.
No, not at all.
So,
at
what
all.
Do you like to do to hang out when you're not performing? Are you a guy that likes to go fish, or?
I love to fish. I spend a lot of time outdoors. I like to work with tools. I worked at Joe Glazer's guitar shop for a year and a half, and learned all about fixing guitars. That's kind of something I do as a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry?
Do you collect old guitars or unusual guitars?
Well, let's put it this way. I have a bunch of them, but I don't really consider it a collection.
Anything more than two is a collection.
Okay, I guess so.
Yeah. What's your favorite one? Do you have a story about some one that you have that belonged to someone else prior?
The one I play, my electric guitar that I play the most is, I guess, my favorite, I'd have to say. I bought it at a place called Stones West in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I was on the road, and somebody said, "Hey, I heard about this guitar shop we all ought to go to." And so a couple of us got in a cab, two or three of us, and went over there, and at that time, this would have been in the probably 86 or 87, something like that. His prices were surprisingly low, I thought, on guitars, and he was charging a fortune for amps. And I bought two guitars from him for like $160 for two of them, and one of them turned out to be the one I play that I play all the time now. Like I said, I believe it's my favorite. But I remember at the time thinking, "Well, I need to go home to Nashville and buy a bunch of amps cheap and come down here and trade with this guy."
So what is the guitar that you play up most of the time?
Well, it's a Silvertone. They were sold by Sears. And they were made by Dan Electro, which was a pretty well-known company. But Dan Electro made them, and Sears put their Silvertone brand name on them. And they're surprisingly good guitars. There's nothing fancy about them, but they have a really good sound, and they play good. And like I said, I've had that one since the late 80s. I've never had any problems with it. It holds up and stays in tune good.
Do you like to play banjo and other stringed instruments as well?
I play the mandolin. I've never been a banjo player. I love to hear a good banjo played, but it's just something I never did. I never tried, and I consider myself a recovering fiddle player. I used to play the fiddle quite a bit, and when I got down here, there were so many great fiddlers that I just kind of gave it up. I thought, well, there's no need to, you know, keep trying to play the fiddle. If you need any fiddle played, there's plenty of people down here that can do it a lot better than I can. So
your first two critically acclaimed blues CDs, First Blood and Thicker Than Water, what have you liked about those CDs? What do you want people to know that don't have them that about those?
Well, the First Blood was the first one, and when we made that, we just went in to a studio here. I don't know if they still call it Treasure Isle or not, but that was the name of it at the time. And we just went in and played basically two sets, and we didn't listen to anything until we were finished, until we had played, you know, basically about every song we knew. And then we just picked the best ones for that record. So it was done totally live, and it was all done in about, I'm going to say, 3 hours. And we were finished recording after that. And then the second one, Thicker Than Water, has some originals songs on it, and it was more like a standard Nashville recording session where we went in and we had never played the songs before. And so we kind of worked them up like you would on any session. Usually when you walk into a session, you've never heard the songs you're going to record. And, you know, they play you a little demo of it, and everybody writes a chart, and then you rehearse it a time or two and then go for it. And that's the way the second one was made. So I think the first one really captures the way the band, that band at that time, sounded live. And the second one is a little more, what's the right word? Well, it's a little more, we took our time with it, I guess. I like the first one best myself, but you can kind of tell that we're just going for it as hard as we can.
So it's sort of like unplugged or more raw, and the Thicker Than Water is more the polished studio sound.
Yeah, that's okay.
And then what bands were those performed with? That was a band you had or that you were in? Which ones?
Well, it was a different group of fellows. The first one was John Gardner on drums and Glenn Wharf on bass. And Reese Winans, who was in Double Trouble with Stevie Ray, was the piano player. And the second one, John Jarvis, was the piano player on it.
Mm-hmm. And then you have a new CD out, so tell us about that and what's different about that. What can fans expect to hear?
The new one, it's called If You Think It's Hot Here, which is the the name of one of the songs that's on it, is the current band that plays on Monday nights down at the Bluebird, and it's Pat O'Connor on drums and Michael Rhodes is on bass. And Michael, I believe that this is true, is the most recorded bass player in history.
Oh, my gosh.
He has played on more commercial recordings than anybody else. And Kevin McKendry is the piano player and also the producer.
Love him.
Yeah, it was his studio where we cut it.
Oh, cool.
And it's kind of like First Blood in that, you know, we went in and basically just kind of played what we play. It's all live.
Oh, my gosh.
With just one or two, there were one or two little fixes where I think on one song I sang the same verse twice or something, but there was so little overdubbing, I couldn't even tell you now which ones were overdubbed on. And then we added the vocal. There's some vocal parts on If You Think It's Hot Here on the title track of Chris and Morgan Stapleton came down and sang the backup harmonies.
Kevin's amazing, and Kevin was on my show maybe a year ago. I think I saw you maybe it was a couple of years ago, and Kevin's been on, and I just can't even believe how fast he can play the piano. I've never seen anyone play the piano like that, and then to have you on guitar and the two of you together is just explosive. It's so incredible. So I want to really encourage people that they're actually performing this Monday night, March 30th, correct? Is that right, Mike? You'll be at the Bluebird Monday? Okay. And all the show dates are on his website, mikehenderson.com, as well as bluebirdcafe.com. You can, they don't sell tickets in advance, right? You have to, people have to get up, get there and get in line, get there early.
Yeah. They have.
Is there two show times?
They have an open mic writer's night for the early part of the night. And then as soon as they get done, we hustle our stuff in and set up. And we usually get started right around 9:30.
Mm-hmm. So that's a show not to miss if you're in Nashville in any coming weeks. If you're not local to Nashville, get there sometime this year and check out the Mike Henderson Band. You won't regret it. So, Mike, how has the TV hit show Nashville impacted the Bluebirds' attendance and its notoriety? Have you noticed an uptick in attendance in the last couple of years?
Absolutely. It really put the Bluebird on the map. People come to town now, and I think they feel like they have to go to the Bluebird.
Mm-hmm.
That it's, you know, it's like people used to come and they had to go to the Grand Ole Opry. And they still do. But I think the Bluebird now has kind of gotten so famous that even when the shows are sold out, you still see taxi cabs full of people come, and they all jump out and stand in front of the club and get their picture taken, and then they just get right back in the cab and go somewhere else.
So have you interacted with any of the cast or crew, or, you know, I'm sure they've been to some of your shows?
I haven't. And I've heard that some of them have been there, but none of them have come up and talked to me. So, you know, I haven't really interacted. I had an opportunity one time to be on the show, and I had a conflict and couldn't do it. They haven't called me again. If they do, I'll certainly be glad to go on.
Well, we'll have everyone write
Michael,
in.
Michael's
go
been
ahead.
On it several
times. Michael's
the bass player
has been on it several times. Well, it's one of my favorite shows. And, you know, I'm a New England girl originally. I wasn't someone that was a blues or a country music fan for most of my early life. And I'll tell you, when you go to the Bluebird, you become an instant convert. And but the TV show, I think, has really has been well done, and the cast is just so well suited for their roles. And I love seeing that it gives so much respect and credit to songwriters. And, you know, a lot of people don't know the hard work behind the scenes in the music business and the toll it takes on personal lives. I don't know, how have you survived so many years? So many amazing musicians have had issues with drugs and alcohol and other challenges. I mean, just the lifestyle, the pressures of the industry. I mean, you seem to have resisted sort of selling out to the industry. Sort of like a Bruce Springsteen, where you've stayed true to your values. Has that been hard to do, or just something you resolved to yourself that you were going to do?
Well, I never had to make any kind of conscious decision like that. Music has always just been, to me, a very natural thing. And I think it's important to not take yourself too seriously. And, you know, to remember, I mean, I like to think about the great, late, great Jack Clement, who passed away 2 years ago, that it was such an important figure in, you know, he worked at those original Sun Studios in Memphis and recorded Elvis Presley and all that, worked with Sam Phillips, and then came here and had a tremendous career as a songwriter and producing Johnny Cash, and just the list goes on and on. But Jack always used to say, he says, we're in the fun business, and if we're not having fun, we're not doing our job. And I think sometimes it's a good idea to remember that no matter how hard you're working, and you may be disappointed about something or something like that, but still, you're supposed to be having a good time. And that's something I kind of try to keep in mind.
Well, and I think it shows when you perform that you bare your heart. Who else has influenced you that is no longer living?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I'd have to go back to all the old blues greats. I've listened to so much of that. Bill Monroe, the bluegrass, father of bluegrass, was a big influence on me, too. I listened to him a lot. The way he would approach taking a solo, I feel like I owe a lot to him in my style, especially my mandolin playing, probably not quite so much on the guitar. But I guess just about everybody I've ever heard has influenced me one way or another. Like the old saying, there's only two kinds of music, good and bad. And you listen to good music, and there's something about it that, you know, that sets it apart. And so when you hear something good, it stays with you, mm-hmm. the way I look at it.
And so are your kids going to follow in your footsteps? I know Kevin's son seems like a prodigy on the piano. Are your kids taking an interest in the music business?
Not particularly. My oldest daughter is a school teacher, teaches elementary school, and my youngest lives up in Chicago, and she's just finished, she went to Columbia up there, and she's a very, very talented fiction writer, and so mm-hmm. she's working on that. And both of them played when they were young, and then they both just kind of put it down and walked away from it. So, and I didn't, you know, try to make them do it or anything. I should have used the Earl Scruggs approach, which people would say, Earl, how did you get your sons to play? They're all so good. And he said, well, we just put the instruments on the bed and told the kids not to touch them.
Oh, my gosh, funny. So what do you have left to do in your life that you haven't done? You've accomplished a lot of your probably personal goals, and, you know, you've traveled, and, you know, you have a lot of accomplishments, but is there something on your bucket list you haven't done yet?
There probably is, but I don't know. I don't think about things like that. I mean, I know that nobody gets to live forever, but I still feel like a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I just try to kind of take everything one day at a time, and remember what Jack Clement said, that we're in the fun business. Try to enjoy everything as much as I can.
Stay in the moment. That's a good Zen practice, just, you know, to stay in the moment and not get too concerned about the future or the past. You can't change the past.
That's right.
Is there, you know, I ask a lot of my guests this question, but, you know, any type of spiritual practice or meditation, or, you know, do you find that in nature primarily in terms of becoming grounded and staying centered?
Well, without going into it too deep, you know, I feel like everybody's personal spirituality is their own, and it's up to everybody to work on that in their own way, in a way that's meaningful to them, and that's what I try to do.
That's cool. We have a caller on hold. I don't know if they were calling in to make a comment or a question. We'll just go ahead and ask them real quick. Caller from area code 641, do you have a question or a comment for Mike?
I got a comment for you real quick, Brenda, and then I got two questions for Mike, if you don't mind,
real
quick.
Okay, good. Go right ahead.
Comment one, I'm on your Blog Talk Radio listening. Great show, by the way.
Thank you.
I can't get a volume to come up. So I don't know if you're now, I called your number, and I can hear you guys just fine, but on the actual Blog Talk Radio, I'm not getting a volume.
On your computer,
sure,
it might be the sound on your speakers. You might have to adjust
got
the speakers.
It. Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm going to try that.
Go ahead with your question.
Number two, Mike, I've written a few songs in my life. I'm 51 years old. I've never done any, I never got anywhere with them. But I did write a song a couple of years ago that I fell in love with, and I sent the actual song to a British artist to try and put the music together for me, because all I had was the lyrics, but I kind of knew what I wanted. And he put together a rock song. Have you ever converted a rock song over to a country song? Have you ever heard the lyrics from a rock song and thought, wow, that would make a great country song?
That's an interesting question.
Well, I mean, to me, a good song's a good song. And, you know, you can do them. A good song, you can put about any kind of musical treatment you want on it, and it should work. If that makes any sense to you, I don't know. I mean, but if it's a good song, it ought to be able to be done more than one way.
All right,
okay.
Cool.
And I got question number two real quick.
Okay.
Question number two. What is the best way, if you have a good song and you being experienced in all this, what would be the best way to present this song to people? Just blast it out on the internet, or actually try and find some people that host songs like this? And I basically want their personal opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. I guess if you know someone that whose opinion you value, you should just play the song for them and see what they think. I was for
that. There's something called SoundCloud that I know a lot of artists use, and you can upload your song to SoundCloud, and if you perform it somewhere, even if it's a small local venue, you can have someone videotape it and put it up on YouTube and start using social media tools, something like Social Zing, which is, if you're on my page, you'll see there's a link there to Social Zing. But using social media and putting it out on YouTube, you should be able to get some feedback.
Well, thank you, folks, very much. I appreciate your information. It's been very helpful.
Thank
Great
you
show,
for
Brenda.
Calling in. What state are you calling in from?
I'm from Grinnell, Iowa, and
okay.
we're a little state that has a million less people than the city of Los Angeles. I'm very proud to live here. We're a very diverse state. We have the little town that I live in deals so much in art and music. In fact, our college here is an art and music major type college. And everybody out here is so diverse. You get to hear so many different things and see so many different things that it just gives you such a creative movement within your own soul that things just start coming out of you. And that's why I appreciate this town so much.
I love it. And I've been to Iowa City, and I love Iowa City and northwestern Iowa and up near Lake Okoboji. Mike, have you ever performed in Iowa?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Been a long time, but I used to play up around in Iowa quite a bit.
Well, Brenda, you've got my number.
Okay.
And if you need, either of you folks get out in this area, let me know. I'll be sure and host you out in our area in Iowa.
Awesome. Tell us your name again.
My name's Walter Gatlin, G-A-T-L-I-N. I'm the son of Johnny Gatlin. He tried to make it in country music, but he did more than kick the lights out. He pissed everybody off, so... He never made it. He ended up passing away playing in little KOA campgrounds and stuff. He was a very angry man, and I'm really glad that he was my dad because it taught me how not to act in public.
Thank you for calling in. It was a surprise and a delight. Thank you so much, Walter. And, you know, Mike, I guess I have a question for you. If people do want you to come to their town and perform either on a big stage or a small stage, can they contact you through your website? And are you open to those kinds of invitations, or are you pretty much just staying local to Nashville?
On my website, there's a phone number on there for Keith Case and Associates handles my booking. And there's a number there that you can call and speak to a fellow named Lee Olson.
All right. And so if people want Mike to come to their town, go to his website, MikeHenderson.com. And are there any cities or states that you have planned on touring to this year in 2015?
Don't have any kind of road plans right now. But, you know, that can always change.
All right. Well, we're going to end with your song, Wouldn't Lay My Guitar Down, and I wondered if you could tell us anything, background on that song, and we'll let you go and so you can get some hot tea and honey down your throat. But any background on that song?
Yes. That song was written by Eddie Clearwater. He's a great Chicago blues artist, and I learned it from one of his records, and... then I ended up making a video of it for my Edge at Night Dead Reckoning record. And when we were shooting the video, the other folks at the label, without telling me, had invited Eddie to come and be in it with me. And he's a wonderful guy, great big tall guy. And when he performs, he wears a full length. Indian headdress.
Oh, and my
so
God.
We were on the, you know, out shooting one of the scenes in an alley downtown, and I turned around and there was Eddie Clearwater.
Oh, my God.
All right. It was a wonderful surprise, and I really enjoyed getting to talk to him and kind of getting to know him a little bit. I haven't seen him in a long time, but as far as I know, he's still doing it. So.
Out there. Is that video that you made on YouTube or on your website?
I'm pretty sure it's on my website.
All right.
There's a place on there to click for videos, and I believe that's one of them.
All right. Well, Mike, thank you so much for spending so much time with us today. We really appreciate it. And my next trip down to Nashville, I'll hope to catch you at the Bluebird Cafe. And you take care and have a great show on Monday night.
Brenda, thank you so much. It's really been a wonderful getting to talk to you. And you've got my phone number now, so anytime you come into town, just give me a call and let me know.
Oh, my God, that would be such a huge delight. I know my brother-in-law and his wife, Don and Ron, they've lived all over the world. They've lived in Africa and India and just a lot of different places. And he truly, truly just loves your music, and I've never seen him love a musician as much as he loves you. So that says something. And we're going to close out with Wouldn't Lay My Guitar Down with Mike Henderson on guitar.
Well, my baby, she left me 'cause I wouldn't lay my guitar down.